session number 12616, reel 2.
Mr. Fryer, reel 2.
How exactly did the Patsy Hendren pick you up?
Well, the Patsy Hendren came alongside, and the lifeboat, being the lighter of the two, we had to wait until we were lifted by the tide before we could jump. And we managed to get across, and I heard somebody say, "Mind your so-and-so legs." And all in that split second, somebody who I don't know, somebody got hold of my collar and the seat of my pants and pulled me over. And I don't know who did it or anything, it just happened. It all happened in that short time. And then, as I say, we went on board and they gave us something to eat. And then we were transferred to the Birza. Well, to be quite honest with you, I can't clearly remember. It must have been a ladder, because it was only a destroyer, so she wasn't all that big out the water. And we went there, and the Polish sailors, they couldn't do enough for us. They gave us what clothes they had to spare. They gave us cigarettes, and they just couldn't do enough for us. And even some of them gave some of the lads their underpants, you know, their long johns. And then we were taken up by the destroyer. We were taken up to up the Clyde to Glasgow, and then we were taken to a hall. I couldn't tell you where. We were taken to a hall where we were dished out with food and facilities for sending telegrams home to our parents, which was all free, of course, everything like that. And it just sent a message home to Mum and Dad just to say everything was all right. And then we were taken to another sort of warehouse and fitted out with clothes. And then we're on our way home then.
Now, can I take you through it again? Mm-hmm. Just to ask you a few questions.
Yeah.
You said that at 9:30 in the morning you went to the laundry, but there was nobody there.
No, I didn't go to the laundry. I went along the deck by the laundry. I didn't pay a visit to the laundry. I was just going to meet some of the laundry staff to talk to as they come out for... Well, just for a 10-minute break, you know, for a smoke and what have you. We just used to have a chat.
Why was there nobody there?
I don't know. I just think it was one of those turns of fate. I think had somebody been there, I wouldn't have been here today. That's my way of looking at it.
So it was just by chance?
Just by chance. Nobody was there.
Whereabouts was the ship at the time?
I think... I think I was told 250 miles off the Irish coast. We were due in Liverpool on the next morning.
So, were you going round Ireland or through the Irish Sea?
We're going along through the Irish Sea. We were due in Liverpool, you see. This was Saturday morning. We were due in Liverpool Sunday morning.
What did you see any aircraft?
No, I didn't see any aircraft. The clouds were very low. I didn't see any aircraft because after all said and done, after that we didn't look for them. But they did machine gun. They did machine gun, and some of them were machine gunned on the deck, on the boat deck. And I believe I've been told, this I don't know for sure, but I've been told there was 45 of the crew lost. There was quite a few in the engine room on the that'd be 8 to 12 watch was lost, and we didn't see any plane at all.
What did the sound of the bombs sound like?
Well, it's hard to explain. It's just explosion and a bit of panic, because everybody taken by surprise. There was a certain amount of panic. It wasn't a case of panic in a case of pushing anybody out the way, if you can follow what I mean, but everybody was shouting and talking and all that business, and it was hard to explain, but it was just bombs.
How it was just
well, once again, it's hard to describe. You were and you weren't, because you had so many people around you. What had to be will be. And we wasn't all that frightened. I think it was more frightening getting into the boats.
Was there anybody on board once the bombs dropped who was in charge and controlling things and giving orders?
No, because as far as I know, as I said, I was on the way down to my quarters, and then we were told to report to D Deck Square, all personnel, which we did, and we were just in our sort of groups, you know, and we were, well, just grouped together. You know, we didn't have any, as I didn't see any officers sort of giving them directions. It was just report to D-Deck Square, and then the abandoned ship went, and of course we just made our way up to the boat deck.
And the ship was sailing by itself when the attack occurred?
Oh yes, no convoy. Oh no, she had nobody at all. No convoy.
Were there any other ships in sight?
No, not as I know of. Not as I know of. As far as I know, she was entirely on her own. We had no escort at all.
How long do you think elapsed between the bombs striking and your getting off the ship?
It's hard to say. I would say... I would say about an hour before the abandoned ship went south. That I wouldn't like to say I'm exact, but I would say about an hour. We were up on D Deck Square, just waiting for orders, waiting to do what we were told to do.
For an hour.
I would say an hour, but then you lose all sense of time and times like that.
What were you doing and saying to each other, Jared? During that time you were in that area?
Don't know really. Just sitting there and waiting for orders, you know, and handing rain and cigarettes. There was plenty of cigarettes being smoked. Everybody was nervous, because you never knew, you see. You're just mustered in this, on this D-Deck Square, and you couldn't see anything. You couldn't see above, or you just couldn't see anything on the ship. And so you didn't see anything, so you couldn't expect anything, you know. It was just one of those things.
Did you see any of the casualties from the bombing?
No. No, only the only casualties I saw was after we got home and were reported down the Labour Exchange. And then I saw some of the lads, you know, with their hands done up and that.
And then when you abandoned ship, you didn't get wet at all?
No, not really. No, I didn't get wet. We only had, didn't go in the water at all. I didn't go in the water. Some of them did. Some of them just jumped in with panic.
What did the damage to the ship look like?
Well, in half an hour, I would say, in half an hour, she was alight from stem to stern. That was the trouble. Was the fire was the trouble. That is why I believe we had to abandon ship, the fire. As we drew away from her, she was one mass of flames.
But you weren't asked to fight the fire?
No. No, I don't think we could have done.
Is it just hopeless?
Because, you see, when you think of it, the Empress of Britain was a beautifully furnace ship. She was she had so much wood on her. You know, it's hard to describe, but she was a beautiful ship. All the hand-carved oak and everything. You know, well, in the case of fire, it just goes up. Anything like that.
What did the ship look like when you got into the small boat?
Well, she looked big, to tell the truth. But when we got in the small boat, we were pulling away. As I say, all she was, just a light. Just on fire.
Was she keeling over?
No. 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 As a matter of fact, I believe the following day, I believe she was in tow. They were going to tow her into Liverpool. And she was in tow, and a torpedo struck. I think she was hit with two torpedoes, and they say she was sank. So obviously the aircraft crew was in contact with shore base and in contact with the submarines.
How did you feel like when you saw the ship afire? Was there any emotional feeling about it?
Well, I suppose really we felt sad because, you know, you class it as your home. You know, and to see a beautiful ship like that, and of course that was an early casualty of the war. I mean, say other times you accept it. You wouldn't accept it, but it's just one of those things.
Did you have any after effects from the sinking?
No, not any after effect. I think I was thanking everybody for being alive, you know. It's just one of those things. It's just I had no after effects regarding health or anything like that.
Which ship did you go to afterwards?
That's a Scythia. She was a Cunard. She was trooping as well. We had to go to Liverpool, and we had to go there and pay our own fare to go and get our own job in wartime. The Southampton docks was closed in those days. There was no movement here. And we went to Liverpool, and that's where we got the ship.
How did that ship compare with the Empress of Britain?
Oh, she was a good ship. She was a good ship, but I must say the Empress of Britain was the best.
Anything happened to you on the Scythia?
Not on the Scythia, no. No, it was only... We were delivering troops again. I think it was a Scythia. Where are we going? We're going in one port, and I think it was Freetown. We were going in Freetown. There's a lot of debris floating around, where obviously one ship had been sunk, blown to pieces or something, because there was a lot of debris floating around, and you know, we were more or less on deck when we were off watch, on deck when we saw this, and just wondering what's going to happen. It's just one of those tense moments when you know there's somebody lurking about, when you see the debris, you know, of another ship.
And you were on the Scythia. You've put in the for about 6 months, from January to July 41.
Mm.
Then you went on to the SS Oregon.
Yeah.
Can you tell me about going on?
Well, we left the Scythia because she docked in Glasgow, and she was taking on a lot of Scots, which meant trouble in those days, as far as the seamen were concerned.
Wow.
So a lot of us left the ship for that reason, because she was taking on a lot of Scottish crew, and we didn't fancy our chances with the Scotsmen, so we just left.
Why was that? You didn't fancy your chances?
Well, there's always a lot of drinking and trouble, and when you get below decks on a ship, you always get the bad apple. You know, you get these that like their drink, they can't carry their drink, they're always looking for trouble. So the best thing is to try and avoid it.
So the Scots had a reputation for that?
Yeah, yeah. So we left that one, and then of course we came back home. We went back to Liverpool again, mate and I. That's that Mr. Redmond I was telling you about, my brother-in-law. we went back to Liverpool, and we more or less, as we call it, shanghaied on this ship. I think we had it. We had to go to the shipping office, and they sent us down to this ship. And when we got down there, she was no more than a tramp steamer. I don't think peacetime she wouldn't have got a license. She wouldn't have got a seaworthy certificate with peacetime. And she was rotten to the core. She's absolutely rotten to the core.
What do you mean?
Well, if she did over 6 knots, all the rivets, you could hear the rivets shaking, she was rotten. This might not sound nice on tape, but on when we joined her, the engineer said to us one day, oh, I've got a job for you two. So we said, well, what's this? Because we were still alongside the quay and in Liverpool, and because we were being repaired, because we were due for a Murmansk convoy, which we missed because of the repair job. And he said, I've got a job for you two, and he said, in the toilets. Well, when we went there, the toilets were absolutely choked, and I refused to do them. I wouldn't do them. And of course, they'd had a mixed crew on this ship.
How do you mean mixed crew?
Well, all nationalities before we got there. She's only a small ship. And anyway, as we looked out the portal there, the NFS was having exercises on the quay, the National Forest Service. And anyway, the skipper went over and spoke to an officer in charge, and they came over and they put the hoses through the portal and cleared the toilets. That's how bad they were. And when we were in our cabin, the two of us, we had a room for two, and Lennon Hall, I had to get down and scrape the floor where it's so thick with oil, grease and oil. You know, it was filth. It was absolutely filth. And we had straw palliasses to sleep on, no mattress as such, just straw bags. And a blanket you could shoot peas through, very, very thin blanket. And as you were laying in your bunk, if you was on the top bunk, you had the deckheads were dripping with condensation all the time. It was that sort of job, you know, it was a terrible job. And excuse me. And we had a prayer on our lips every day, because we didn't expect to get home. We were always being told off for losing the convoy, where we was losing speed, you know. And we were lucky to get home, you know. We never thought we'd get home.
This was in the Atlantic.
Yeah, because we were, yeah, we went across to Halifax, Nova Scotia. We went over there and got a lot of shell casings for load back. But that was a nightmare trip, that was.
But the ship survived it.
Pardon?
The ship survived it.
American ship, she was. Well, you tell by the name, the Oregon. She's an American ship, but well, you're just frightened to go to sleep, you know. You never knew what was going to happen.
Had we bought it from the Americans, or was it no, for it's American ownership?
Just on American ownership, I suppose.
But with the British crew?
As far as I know, yeah. Yeah. It's a very small ship, you know. It's you had to come across the open deck. If you was coming up off watch, midships, and our quarters was aft, you came up, you had to call in the galley and get the food on your way up. So you had to wait until the movement of the ship before you got that. You got that pathway to make your way. You know, you had to sort of work it between the movement and the ships, the waves, as the saying is. And it was quite an experience, really.
Did you just do the one voyage in that ship?
Oh, yes. I wouldn't have done that if I could have helped it. Oh, yeah, only the one. Only the one. We docked it, on that one, we docked at Seychelles.
Seychelles?
No, Seychelles.
South Shields.
By Newcastle, wasn't it?
Yes.
Oh, wait. South Shields. And that's when we were paid off then. We had some Welshmen on board. And and the crew and the deck crew.
Then what? Where did you go then?
Once again. Oh, the Californian. This one, we were lucky with this one. She came in the Southampton docks to be converted from an armed cruiser to a troop ship. And Len and I, we were given a job on board because they had to keep the boiler going. And we were sent down there, and luckily we had 3 months working in Southampton docks on her. So we were home, you know, for 3 months, which was a lot. And but we had to go down of a night time, fire watching. We had to take our fire watching duties. We had to do that. And we were lucky there. We, as I say, we just worked in our home port for 3 months.
Was this another American ship?
California? No, I don't think so. I don't know. I don't know what the company was. I don't think she's. I don't think she was. I left. My brother-in-law, he stayed with her. He sailed with her, that one. So then we got off, three of us, I think, we got off that when we paid off.
So you didn't sail with her?
We didn't sail with her. We went across, just a few steps across the number 5 dry dock in Southampton Dock. And the Langibby Castle was in dry dock being repaired because she'd just been torpedoed. Langibby Castle, so she went in for repairs. So we signed on the Langibby Castle. Well, the next thing we knew, we were up anchor and away to Gurrock, and then we were going to all the Scottish locks training the American troops for the invasion of Oran, North Africa.
But you weren't doing any of the training, were you?
Oh no, we just had our duties down in the engine room. No, we didn't mix it with the troops at all. The only time we went through their mess decks and all that is when we had to go down in the propeller shaft tunnel, in the tunnel to do the greasing, you know, the bearings and that.
What kind of a ship was the Langibby Castle?
Langibby Castle, well, peacetime, she belonged to the Union Castle line. She used to sail from Liverpool, I think. I don't think she sailed from Southampton. A lot of Union Castle ships came from Southampton. There was one in and out every week, but the Langibby, I think, she went from Liverpool. And she wasn't a bad ship at all, really.
Can you tell me about taking part in the North Africa landings with her?
Yeah, well, we got to Oran, and I think I'm right in saying that we got there, no, I think about 2 o'clock in the morning, the troops started going ashore. And it was a marvellous sight. It's a sight you've got to see to believe. It's a sight of all these landing craft going ashore, and you could see all the sort of phosphorus on the water. And it's a sight you see nice films, but you don't see anything like the real thing. And it's a lovely sight. Of course, there's plenty of firing going on, and we had a shell at the bridge, and the engineer, an old engineer, he's getting on in years, and luckily he was transferred from another Cape boat up in Scotland. He was transferred from another ship, and the poor soul got killed. He got killed, but we were under shell fire. And the silly thing, I thought anyway, was when the ships were anchored off of Oran, they were flying barrage balloons. To me, that was you were setting up a target, wouldn't you, for your opposition? And we had a barrage balloon flying up from our ship then. So of course, you get guns ashore firing at you. They got a good marker, haven't they? But anyway, we left there and. And we came home, and that was that.
What impression did you get of the American troops?
Well, I was down below decks when they were going off on the landing craft, because we had no lifeboats then, you know, because our lifeboats were taken away and replaced with landing craft for the troops, you see. So if the ship was hit, just bad luck, you see, it was all landing craft. And they were like everybody else, I suppose. They were quite noisy, their language was strong and everything. They were just going on an invasion. They didn't know what was in front of them, so they just gave vent to their feelings, I should think.
But were they just like the British and Australian troops?
Yes, I suppose. I suppose most troops are the same when they're under those conditions. You know, you don't know whether you're going to survive or not, so...
Then you finally went to Cape Town Castle in January 1943?
Yeah, I was sent from here, from Southampton Shipping Office, I was sent to Liverpool to join a Cape Town Castle. And of course, as I said, the doctor on the Langibby Castle had me down as sick. He, you know, I shouldn't have gone really, but he had no alternative because of security, and I had to go. And he was on the Cape Town Castle. Well, of course, as soon as he saw me, he recognised me, and we went through things together, and he said, "I'm sorry, I can't take you." So eventually I was declared unfit for further sea service.
On what grounds?
Chest trouble. I put it down to the FSO and the boats from the Empress of Britain. You see, and I get a disability pension, small disability pension, for that.
You mean from the exposure to the cold?
Yes, to the elements, yeah. That's what I think, yeah. Anyway, I got a pension, a war pension, through that, because of that. Small pension.
So that was the finish of your Merchant Navy career?
That was the finish of my Merchant Navy career, yeah.
What did you go into after that?
Oh, I went down the docks labouring. Labouring with the carpenters down the docks after that. Then I had to leave it because of my chest trouble, so I was going to hospital for treatment, you know.
Did you see any of... Were you in any of the bombing in the war
Britain? I was in the Blitz in Southampton, in the main Blitz in Southampton.
Can you describe that?
Well, I came home off the Empress of Britain, what was that, in October, and it was in November when the Blitz lasted, and I was going out about 6 o'clock one evening, on a Saturday evening, when the sirens went. I was going out to my local, and that was at 6 o'clock, and that went on until 3:30 in the morning. And we went in my local. I was the only one there, of course. And then we were told, or we were asked, to get out and go to the public house opposite, because they had a cellar, big cellar. And we went down there, and that was by Woolworths, if you know the town at all, on the corner there. There's public house there, and we went down there, and then we were asked to move and go down a big warehouse in Ogle Road, where the post office is. And we went there, and the all clear went at 3:00 in the morning. And when we came out, the high street was, well, weren't just one mess. There was cables all about. There was tram wires, cables, all sorts of cables, fire smouldering, you know.